That was just absolutely terrible. I don't know why it was peeking out like that, but that was so terrible, I'm dropping it. So I'm just going to drag in our guest now. Mr. Clinton Richardson really doesn't need any introduction, really. Clint Richardson, he's the gentleman behind the Corporate Nation over at RBN. He's done thousands and thousands of hours worth of work on the radio. He's got a new work out there called thestrawmanstory.info is where you can find it. And the book is entitled Strawman, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person. And to speak about that and just a whole lot of whatever else we feel like talking about, it's Clint Richardson, everybody. Clint, welcome back to Inside the Eye Live.
Hey, greetings, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. It's been like, gosh, like 3-4 years since you were here, you know? So it's been a while, so it's great to have you back.
How much knowledge you can obtain between that period of time.
Isn't it? Isn't it amazing? We probably didn't acquire too much. We're just kind of aggregating what we know, and that takes us forever. Real quick, are you still at RBN? I've heard different stories, and I really don't follow so much. So are you still at RBN?
No, I gave up the show on very good terms. I left. I really wanted to finish this. We'll call it a book. It's actually a several volumes worth of work, and I just released the first volume. I couldn't keep driving myself insane trying to get guests and do all the research for shows and do all this research for this book. So I gave it up. I miss it. I definitely miss it.
So now you're talking about now this is called Strawman, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person. You are running right now at strawmanstory.info, a fundraiser. You've raised good numbers here, man. $2,300+. So guys and gals, you can work your way over to strawmanstory.info. And if you've got some extra shekels, I'm sure Clint would like to would appreciate a little donation over there. Is that correct?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've spent, you know, I gave up my career. I gave up friends and family. I gave up just about everything in life, including my creature comforts and all my, all the things that all the securities that they say are so evil, you know. And I've done everything for free, all my movies, all of my radios, all of my writings, everything I've ever done has been absolutely free, and I will continue to do that, which is why the book is, of course, downloadable for free. The only reason I'm asking for money at this point is because, you know, I nothing could be worse than to be dependent on money, especially when you really truly understand the notion that it is truly the love of it or the belief in it is the root of all evil. But to be stuck in a place where all I can do is offer this thing for free, I can't print it because I have no income. I have no, you know, I have no income, period, end of story, because I chose this lifestyle. So this is the first time I've actually said, well, gosh, in order to print this thing and actually put it into a form that isn't just erasable out of the ether, you know, from the touch of a Google monster's button, I'd like to put it into print form. But to do that, it's just so damn expensive. And the only way I can really justify even printing it, not publishing, by the way, printing, and
yeah, exactly, and, printing
is to raise enough money to get some kind of discount on the volume of it. And honestly, Dennis, it's the only way I'm going to ever get ahead to the point where I actually have something to give to people, and to actually maybe go out on the road and talk about this stuff. I don't want to be a tent preacher, but geez, I'd love to pull a David Icke or something and actually, because I could fill a 10-hour spot with no problem at all talking about all of this stuff and really going over how all this stuff actually affects. But I can't do that until I can actually get ahead. And so as much as I hate it, yeah, I'm taking donations.
Yeah,
by all means, download the book, give it away to everybody you possibly can. If you can, or someone is out there, you know, some trust fund baby or something, for God's sake, I'm dying to print this, but I refuse to go. I refuse to mark this book with any kind of ISBN. I will not put it on Amazon. I will not put it anywhere except in my own garage. And in order to get it, you're going to have to contact me personally, talk to me, and say, yeah, I'd like one. But I'm not going to lower myself to this legal system anymore now that I understand it.
Okay. And so it's straw man. This work, explain for everybody. Obviously, you and I deal a lot with words and how words alter and change realities. What's the main point behind straw man?
Well, the word itself brings up a lot of confusion in people. I think a lot of people will use it as a fallacious assault, poisoning of the well, that kind of thing, to say, oh, you're one of those people, right? Straw man is actually a very legitimate term. It comes from the Latin straminius homo, which man of straw. So it's not as if it's just some truth movement thing or whatever people conspiracy theory. No, it's actually referring to what is called the person. And if person is a word, I think that probably of all the words out there, you can find discourses on the word person that are 20 pages long and still don't get to the bottom of the notion of what a person is. And that was one of the hardest obstacles for me, is to understand that a person is it's kind of like the Jew and the Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Well, a person, the maxim of law is that all persons are men, but not all men are persons. And that tells me, hey, a person is not a man. A person is a status. That's all it is. And so until we are able to separate our status, our reputation, our numbers, our marks, our signs, our signatures, all of that stuff that belongs, all of our contracts basically that belong to this rented property that we call Clint Richardson or Dennis Fetcho or whatever your Christian name attached to your surname is, the last name being actually the word last, the reason they use the word last name is the same reason that in the Bible it says last will and testament. Whatever I use as my last name, that is my intent. That is my will. I am either acting as myself or I am acting in the third person as an agent for a status that I am renting, sort of like a vessel, or say I'm renting a car. If I rent a car, I'm renting a vessel, a commercial vessel, and I have to follow all of the rules and laws, and I have to know all the words that make up that law and that contract, and I have to follow the law of that vessel. Well, the reason we're bound by all these crazy, crazy legal laws, the laws of nations and all that, is because we're stupid enough to act in the person of government. A status that is property of another that we agree to be surety for, to ensure its actions within their law. The reason we're bound by such a horrific system of laws, it's not us that's bound by it, it's the person. And as long as we're attaching ourselves, as long as we're attaching our good name, our first name, our origin name, some people, you call it the Christian name or God's gift name, however, whatever makes you comfortable. As long as we're attaching our good name to our spiritual name, to the legal name, the last name, the surname, as in sure ants, then we're screwing ourselves. We're agreeing to be under a system of law that is created by another. It's not the natural law. It takes away your right to actually be part of that unalienable concept of the natural law, the natural rights. And so you're literally selling your soul when you become a United States person.
We had a talk with L.B. Bork last week about this, and maybe you're going to be able to get to the heart of it faster than I felt he was able to. What is the value then? I mean, how do you break free of all of this system, this legal system that has been constructed like a cage around everybody?
Yeah, and that's the thing. The perfect example of it is, of course, the movie The Matrix. And in my second volume, I have a whole chapter devoted to the actual works, the actual books that the Matrix movie was actually based on. A lot of people do not know this, but there's a prop in the movie. It's a hollowed out book, and on the title of the book is Simulacrum and Simulation. And that is a work by a guy named Jean Baudrillard from France. He's dead now, unfortunately. But the book itself, Simulacrum and Simulation, you've got an interview with Keanu Reeves who said he had to read that book as well as two other books before he could even read the script for the movie. And if you read the script or the book Simulacrum and Simulation, which again is the hollowed out book that that he puts the money in and gets the computer discs out when the girl comes to his door, or the guy comes to his door with the girl with the white rabbit. You will understand, you will have a breakthrough in knowledge that you can't, it can't be valued in anything. It's so incredible to see where that movie, first of all, where the movie comes from and how much that movie takes away from that book and gives you no insight or knowledge whatsoever. It just puts this sort of new age false sense of what that book was actually trying to tell people. And that book was basically trying to tell people that you're in a quote unquote matrix basically means artificial womb, which was something that was talked about in Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. I can't remember what it's called.
Yes. Yeah, I forget that yet.
Yeah, so you're in this artificial structure, this artificial protective thing that they call a matrix or a mother, a womb. The notion that you're protected and all the things you do by money, by insurance, which in reality is nothing at all. You have all these artificial wombs that are created for you to keep you in this sort of fictional state of being where you recognize everything that's artificial, everything that's made of straw, in other words, over the reality it represents. So I respect my person more than I respect myself. I actually allow myself, my true natural self, my first person, to be literally consumed by my third person, by the property of another and the law of another, instead of following the natural law and absolutely doing no harm. I'm following the law of what colloquially we would call the devil, the king of lies, right? It's a fictional legal means art, anything that's opposed to nature, basically. So it's amazing when you actually come to the bottom of this and you understand that We have two systems here going on, two systems of law. One is the self-evident or self-existent law of nature, which includes the laws of nature, which are basically, you know, the design, if you will, of how nature works. And then the law of nature being how we're supposed to act and protect each other and all of nature. So you have this beautiful, beautiful, wonderful thing which we refer to as God's law or the unalienable rights of men, which is a duty to all men, a negative duty to never harm another. And then we have the legal law, which is quite the opposite. We have license. Another word for license is anarchy. We have license to break with the natural law and just completely harm. And
you know, for me, I can't separate license from lice and something that always is taking a little bit of blood from you. Like
right, license. The only reason you need a license is to break the natural law. That's the only reason you ever need a license. Period. End of story. And you're breaking the natural law the second you take a person, an artificial construct, an identity, if you will. I'd like, if you don't mind, Dennis, I kind of wrote down, because I knew that you, of all people, with your history, would understand and be able to have discourse on this particular aspect.
All right.
You know, because you've gone so far beyond with your study of and research into words and how much power they really truly have. Mm-hmm. Over our concept of what reality actually is. And to preface that, I would say that if we're going to come to any kind of agreement or understanding, then we have to agree on the foundation. Without a foundation, there is no possible way that we can ever come to a meeting of the minds, right?
Yeah, so we must set the definitions before we can even start the dance, right?
And that's the whole point, is that they get to set their own terms of art. They are the creators of the art, the thing that is artificial, the system of law and the person and all the corporations, you know, those are persons. They get to set the words. Their letters patent. They get to define the terms. We don't. We are just renters of their property, right? So they define the law. They define the terms. We simply obey it and get, quote-unquote, protection, right? So we have to start. There were two quotes by this guy named Horace Greeley, and I'd like to read both quotes.
All right.
As sort of a precursor to what got me really to understand how things work. This guy's name's Horace Greeley. He was the founding editor of the New Yorker and the New York Tribune newspaper.
That does sound familiar, yes.
Yeah, he was an elitist guy. I mean, he's one of the bloodline, basically. He's one of the guys that are at the top. Not one of us down here in the multitude. Not one of us goyim, you know, suffering and being patient to the masters. We are, this guy tells it like it is, and he was in several different correspondences.
By the way, he was born in February 3rd, 1811, everybody, and died in 1872, so this is going back into the real history of the
law. This is what this is going to is the time of the 14th Amendment, the time of the Civil War, because he was in correspondence with Lincoln. Where Lincoln was like, hey, yeah, dude, I don't want to get rid of slavery, trust me. But if it's going to save the Union, well, then we're going to do it. Mm. And if it's a Civil War, that's fine. The idea behind, quote unquote, freeing the slaves, freeing, actually the word free means franchise. So it was to denizen people into national citizenship. And this is what Horace Greeley actually says. All right, first thing he says, and this is probably the most important quote in the entire book, and it's one that I said, well, I'm going to prove that this is true. And I did. He says, it is impossible to enslave mentally or socially a Bible-reading people. The principles of the Bible are the groundwork of human freedom. Now, I looked at that when I first saw it. Being a hater, absolute despising the church, right? Despising the Bible. And I said, that's complete bullshit. I don't believe that for a second. But because this book is not my opinion, because I wanted to know the truth despite myself, because I wanted to know the self-evident truth, what can this guy possibly mean? And when I found this other quote from him, I knew that this was someone that I needed to pursue. I needed to find out what gave him that opinion, the same opinion that Noah Webster and so many others have. He's speaking on the post-Civil War 14th Amendment citizenship, where he says, "We have stricken the slave shackles from 4 million human beings and brought all laborers to a common level, not so much by the elevation of former slaves as by practically reducing the whole working population, white and black, to a condition of serfdom. While boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by an inequitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression which, though more refined, is not less cruel than the old system of chattel slavery." So here's a guy who's not a slave, he's a master, okay? He's one of the elitist people out there, the private people. He actually is telling us that we have been put into a system of slavery that is nationalized, and he's speaking here of the 14th Amendment. So he's saying the slaves weren't taken out of slavery as much, I should say they were taken out of private slavery and put into public slavery, and all the indentured servants, all the people who weren't of the bloodline were, you know, the workers, in other words, the working class, were also put into 14th Amendment citizenship. And you have to understand that that means that it's called an attainder of blood, which is a corruption of blood, which means you have no inheritable rights of land.
Yeah.
So now everybody's...
Even to this day, really, with the tax systems they've set up.
You're in a modern... This was the creation of a modern feudal system. That was the 14th Amendment. 13th Amendment is very important to the 14th Amendment. 13th Amendment, when you actually read it, it says voluntary servitude and voluntary slavery are now legal. So they took the ability of private men to hold slaves and they nationalized it, calling it 14th Amendment citizenship. Now, people don't like to hear this, but I'm sorry, I've proven this. So I took these quotes and I said, okay, here's a guy that's telling me that, first of all, I'm a slave. I'm a serf, basically. And he's right, because I've verified that I can't hold land as a public United States citizenship. I'd have to be a private person of a private citizen of one of the states, the actual creators of the government, not the people under government, but the people over government. Those are the landholders, right? So I can only be a renter. I can only be a tenant. And so I'm taking that and I'm saying, okay, but he also says that a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved. So there's obviously something going on here. And what I found out, Dennis, is that the Bible is part of the common law. It's not up for debate. It's part of the common law. The problem with the common law is they call it the unwritten law. It's not enforceable. Okay, we've entered into a contractual situation. We've put ourselves into a straw man. And we're under a system of law that has nothing to do with the common law. We have no right to for torts. We can't complain. It's like renting a car. You know, you're in a contract. You're renting a vehicle. You have none of the rights that these private people actually have, and you certainly have no constitutional rights because the Constitution is a negative document that only protects the rights of those who have reserved all of their rights. So these private people of each state means people, they've reserved all their rights. They're not United States citizens. They're the states. They're in the territories. We're in the nation. The nation is a fiction. And so we cannot be recognized as a true man or a true private citizen, if you will. And that's where we're at. And this concept of a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved. I said, well, wait a minute. The church, I mean, how many Christians are there? How many people go to church? How many denominations of church are there? And they all have this Bible right there. What do you mean a Bible? Everybody's reading the Bible, right?
But so Dennis, talking about a legal reality, not a belief then.
Yeah, yeah, you know as well as I, Dennis, that you cannot read the Bible in English. It's purposefully mistransliterated. The words in the Bible that are written in English, which these guys, by the way, call dog Latin. The only way to read the Bible is to go back to the Latin, the Greek, the Hebrew, the Chaldean, all of these different forms and structures of language that are completely and utterly different and often opposed to what the English language actually in other words, I'll say it this way. The idea of the English language is to cause illiteracy while making you think that you're really smart, right? The word smart actually means to be put in pain. the notion that these PhDs and professors out there are very, very proud of themselves for their discourses in English has actually become sort of a personal joke with me, because you're really just at the top of illiteracy, right? You're like the house slave almost. And so what we say in English is heard by them in the Latin. That's why we can't win in court. It's why we go into the court, or we go and we talk to a police officer, or we talk to some government official, or even ourselves as agents, and we believe we're saying something from the heart. We believe that this word means this thing. But in reality, just like in the Bible, everything is figurative. We have to remember that the legal language is all a lie. Everything about it is fictional, figurative, metaphoric, not real. And the Bible is written very, very similarly in that fashion. And so the only way to understand the legal law is to understand the words of the Bible as well and compare the two, which is what I've done. And so finally, I know that you'll understand this. Okay, we have the notion of the separation of church and state. But in reality, if you think about it, the church and the state are inseparable, right?
Okay.
You cannot have a state without a church, and you cannot have a church without a state. The state always every state, the secular government, every state always starts out with, well, under God's authority we create this state. Therefore, there has to be some form of church. The church, on the other hand, is in a constant state of attack. Because it's false, it's absolutely fake, it's against the Bible, this whole concept of organized religion, and so it needs the state to protect it. The state needs the church, its ecclesiastical law, to support its civil law, and of course the civil law and the ecclesiastical law are all created by the Pope, so the church needs the state to protect it, and the state needs the church to justify it. You cannot, there is no separation. And so we say in America, you know, we can see this obviously in Vatican City, in Rome. We can see this obviously in England, where the church and the state are mixed. But if for some reason in America, we actually believe in this notion of separation of church and state. But what that really refers to is the separation of the moral law, scriptural law, from the unwritten law, from the civil law, which means that as a United States citizen, we have no ability for the freedom of religion. We have no ability to fight or act according to our religion. And the courts have agreed that freedom of religion is a franchise, and it means that you can believe anything you want in your head, in your mind, but you can't act on your belief. Your moral belief must be subdued so that the state may always be, the legal law must always be over the spiritual law, the moral law. That is what our separation of church and state. The problem is, we believe that that means that there is no church, or there is no, but think about it, man. How many people, Dennis, have you known that have been separated in their marriage?
No, I don't want to count them all.
Well, so are, okay, they're separated, but are they still married?
In our case, no, but many, yes.
Right, well, a legal separation simply means you're not living together, but you're still married.
Mm-hmm.
A divorce is not an annulment. An annulment is an end of contract. A divorce, the reason why people have so much trouble with their kids and with their wives, why men have to pay so much money to horrible, horrible, horribly induced women on money, because they're lawyers, it's because they're still married, the contract still exists, but it's in the state of
the... You know, you're breaking up, but that was a good end of the first half hour. It's The Fetch, everybody. Clint Richardson is our guest. A lot of time here. Have a great half hour. Stay tuned. Back.
The necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation. Your survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big-ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
Oh, no, no.
I'm sorry you had
come on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents on the offline home canning how to do everything website, all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live final half hour. It's the bottom of hour number 3. Show's blowing by, quite honestly, everybody. And our guest right now, Clint Richardson. He's the former host of The Corporate Nation over at RBN. He's got a new book out called, let me see if I can get there quickly, Straw Man, The Real Story of... of your artificial person. There you go. I got it in. Anyways, guys, welcome back. Let me kind of get this thing potted down, Clint, and then I'll jump you back in here. All right. Hi, Clint. Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks for that's happy sound there. That the banjo music's my happy song. It's got a half hour to go from a 3-hour day. And as you know, these shows take time to do and put together. How many? You spent thousands of hours doing radio, haven't you?
I'd say I've done about 1,000 shows. Yeah, I did about 480 or so shows on RBN.
How many interviews?
What's that?
How many interviews have you done over the years?
You mean like this, or did
yeah.
I do?
Yeah, like this.
I don't know. I've been doing it for so long now. It's hard to remember. About 6 years, 7 years.
People don't understand just how much time guys like you and I really give out, do they? They don't realize it. It's thousands and thousands of hours of our lives, just, and we do it because we obviously appreciate the audience, appreciate being able to be in a position to give away knowledge equally. You know, there is a little bit of a grace there, if you want to say, you know, to be able to do this stuff.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a sacrifice, maybe the ultimate sacrifice. I don't know. I know a lot of people take advantage of the situation and sell a lot of products and, you know, I won't name names, get a lot of corporations going and turn into basically a something very insincere and completely away from the first intent of doing this. Once money comes into the equation, you realize you can milk people for certain amounts. Well, then the intent changes, which is why I said I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to sell anything. I'm never going to and my book is not for sale. It's only available by donation. I'm never going to have anything that's going to take me away from the intent and the truth of the actual, you know, the actual charitable notion of doing radio. That is a very difficult place to stay, of course, and you have to accept poverty. You have to accept, you know, that you're going to buy your clothes at your thrift store from now on. You have to, you know, you have to rely on the grace of others, and it's a wonderful place to be. It's just not
the freedom.
For
what people don't get though is once you figure it out. Because I've done it too, Clint. I've been there, believe me. But there is an intellectual freedom involved. You're not tying your brain down every day over some trivial thing just to go make a buck.
Right, right. And once you figure out, too, that basically the entire job market, the structure out there, anything you can go to school for, amazingly, if you think about it for a second, it's all to support fiction, whether it's to be a bank teller or loan officer, if you know you're dealing with money, which is, again, the root of all evil. You're doing insurance, you're doing something to support the fiction, and which is, again, totally against the Bible. So it's an amazing understanding or realization, awakening, to realize that everybody out there, whether it's your, you know, maybe you're a computer programmer, whatever, you're creating. You know, I spent 8 years in Hollywood putting sounds as a sound engineer and sound designer. And I got to be honest, man, I have nothing to show for it. I can say, look, I made that movie. I made that game. I made that commercial. But what did I really make? I have – it's digital information. It's nothingness. I have nothing to show for 12 hours a day, 8 years of my life. Nothing at all to show unless I show you a movie, you know, that I worked on or some fictional thing. To me, that's amazing because that time could have been spent building a barn, building a home, tilling lands, and doing things of the things that I'm supposed to be doing, right? Instead of making money, causing others to be inducted and brainwashed by what I'm creating, right? My last project was a project called Resident Evil, the fifth video game.
It was actually showing here in the Middle East last week.
Well, yeah, there you go. So it's, you know, sorry, Middle East, we're Americanizing you.
We really are, man, trust me.
Yeah, so I'm here, I am making these demons come to life, blood and gore that I did really well, you know, and I realized, holy crap, I got to get out of this. And that was my last real, that was my career. I gave it up. I mean, I have a hell of a resume that's absolutely worthless. And when I really think about what that resume represents, pure and utter waste of time and a pure and utter contribution to the pure destruction of empathy with kids playing video games all day, watching blood and guts going all over the place. I really was a contributor to what I consider to be the Jewish agenda. I worked for Jews. I mean, the Jews owned the studios. There's no question about who owns Hollywood. And I was part of it. I was one of their – I actually consider myself as one of their seanines, one of their helpers, without ever realizing it, of course. But until I started waking up to it, until I started seeing soldiers flying drones in Iraq and Pakistan and Afghanistan like it's a freaking video game with a three-second delay, dropping bombs on women and children with a 3% accuracy rate, and everything else is collateral damage, right? That's what I'm contributing to. That was my awakening to say I'm not going to do this anymore. And I gave up $100,000 a year to do what I'm doing now, which is to talk to you and hopefully reach your audience and actually say, look, something's very wrong, very, very wrong with what we're doing, with what we're participating in. And it's all I can do. I mean, I either sell myself and work some pointless job to make money, to buy food, or I do this and I sacrifice what I, you know, everything I can, and try to you know, still actually eat.
Yeah, you know, you brought something up that was kind of interesting, and you talked about this digital reality, and I think it's a warning in a way to modern man. They don't because they don't know history. If you read Timaeus, they mentioned how there was a great cataclysm, and because nobody wrote anymore, you know, that humanity fell so low because they didn't have anything recorded. And we're almost getting to that, aren't we? Boy, if we lose electricity, everything's lost.
Yeah, and I think I hate to say it, I think that's why I want to get my book into print, because I'm like, they're gonna cut this thing pretty soon, especially the more and more we talk and have this ability, but our whole libraries are digital. Everything's on the cloud. It's very convenient. But what the hell happens when you don't have access? It's not your cloud. It's not your internet. It's not your government. It's not your constitution. What the hell do people think is theirs? Nothing is there. Everything's been robbed from us, including our ability to go and actually get books. That's becoming harder and harder. Because once everything's in this digital realm, it's kind of like the Tower of Babel, you know. You come along, you destroy the tower, then all the knowledge is lost, and everybody's speaking a different language. Nobody has source. Nobody has material or substance. It's all gone.
Yeah, that's the kind of premonition I've been getting. These guys just want everything on the cloud so that if there is a cataclysm, literally humanity's screwed.
Well, you know as well as I do, these guys don't have an original idea in their heads except how to steal, correct, how to pirate everything, yeah, under us. So what they're doing is they're having us register, patent, copyright all of our ideas. But when we do that in person, we're doing it in their property. So we don't actually own. This is why I don't publish the book or write it in my name, my surname, because it's private. It's not public. I'm not doing it for the frickin' state. I'm not registering it in Clint Richardson's name. It's private. I'm not selling it. I'm not putting it into Mammon. I'm not doing any of the things that would cause it to become the property of government. But everybody else out there is. The second you copyright, the second that you get any kind of ISBN, marks, barcodes, all that stuff, you have given your property, whatever kind of property it is, to government. And who's government? Well, you know, this is the one thing I wanted to get across to you. Okay, again, church and state are inseparable. And again, divorce is not an annulment. It's not an end of contract. It's why the court can say you're going to continue to pay your wife this, this, and this, and your children are, you know, I control your children. Well, children is a legal term. It's not a real thing. It's a person. And as long as you agree that your children were abandoned through your actions, your births, your vital statistics that you gave to cause the birth certification, the creation of a legal entity, as long as you're saying, yes, my child is that name that you registered, well, then they have control of your kid, because it, the child is a legal term. Even the Bible says don't have children, don't have a wife, don't have land, don't have – when it says that, it's talking about the fictional titles, the artificialness, the person, the persona, the personification, the anthropomorphization of the real thing. Of course it wants you to have – of course you're supposed to have a wife, but a legal marriage is a marriage between two persons, not two men or male and female. Two man is a term meaning both male and female. Sorry, I have to remember with all the shit going on that you have to be clear about these things. In other words, natural blood. In other words, so yeah, the whole concept. Why do the courts have control of your children? They don't. They have control of your children's person. As long as you don't separate the person from the man, the fiction, the status, the legal vessel, the commercial ship, citizenship from the actual flesh and blood little guy, well, then, yeah, they're going to have control of everything.
You know, we talked to L.B. Bork like this last week. How do people go about breaking this cycle? Is it possible, really?
Yeah, and that's where, again... This is my whole point is actually that a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved. You're acting the part. Now, when the birth certificate comes along, remember the most important aspect of this is that it's all voluntary, Dennis. We volunteer. Volunteerism is actually is called the doctrine of master and servant. That's what volunteerism actually is in the legal sense. So if I volunteer to be the servant or subject, as a 14th Amendment citizen is defined, of the United States, well, then I'm actually volunteering to be subject to these people and their government, these private people, these landholders, right? I'm acting the part. Now, the birth certificate itself is the creation of a person, a legal entity.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with me. It's completely separate from me. It has absolutely nothing to do with me or my child. When I start growing up, that's when I start voluntarily participating in the franchise, in the freedom that is given to the citizenship. Okay? I register myself. I start using the name, the surname of the state, admixed with my Christian name, to get a bank account, to get a driver's license.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I start using my Christian name, which is my own name, or what you might say is God's name, and I attach it to the surname, which is the state's property. That is a joinder. That is a contractual relationship. I become a subject to the master. I start using the signature. I start using combining the name and getting a driver's license. I start doing all these things. I register for Selective Service. I get Social Security. These are all voluntary acts. Okay? So, unfortunately, we don't realize it. We feel like we're being forced to do it, but it's all voluntary. And the important part about that is that this is a term that I cover heavily. It's called confirmation or ratification. It's when a lie, something that is artificial, is confirmed as the truth. So we volunteer to become that entity that's created in the birth certificate, and our actions – by using the name to get a bank account and have the protections, the consumer protections of a citizenship of the United States, that is where we start becoming or acting the part of, as its agent, the person. We actually believe we are. I believe I am Clint Richardson, and therefore I'm going to get all these benefits and great things, when in reality it's slavery. It's voluntary slavery, right? So –
you know, you're describing a binding spell almost.
Yes, absolutely. What are spells made of? Words.
Yeah, words.
words. Words are everything. You're taught to dismiss words. You aren't, but most people are taught to dismiss words. And here's the real kicker, man. This is what I figured out. The church is actually set up to cause all of us goyim out here. All of us goyim has a specific meaning, Dennis. And I never knew this, but goyim means to be one of the multitude, one of the common people of the nation. If you're part of a nation, if you're not part of the territory, the state, the land, and instead you're a nationality, an ethnicity, speaking the language of another, which is what ethnicity is, then you're a goyim. That's what the word means. You're part of the national identity, which means your father is not Jehovah or God. It means your father is the people, the creators of the government, right? So the church is set up, knowing that it's the church and state are inseparable. They cannot exist without each other. The church is set up to cause all of us to never actually read the Bible. Well, that affects the church creates two classes, believers and non-believers. Now, we have to know that the word believe means leave or leaf actually means love. Okay, so to be in love or to not be in love. So I'm either a believer in the church or I love the church or I hate the church. Okay? The believer, the lover, loves the church's words, the spell that is given by the priest class, and never questions the translation. We all complain. What's the biggest complaint, right? We who hate the church, we who don't love the words of the church, we say these people follow the doctrines of the church, and the Bible says never take any doctrine. It's the last thing it says in Revelation, never take a doctrine besides this. Right, we believe in the doctrines of the church, so we love the church, and we actually then become a hater of the Bible. Then there's the non-believer, the non-lover, who's going to hate the church and believe, for some reason, that the church is the originator of the Bible. So we're going to dismiss the Bible because the church uses it as its tool. We actually are fooled into thinking that the Bible came after the church. The church was, you know, the church can only worship something. Well, that means the Bible had to come way before the church. The Bible, of course, is scriptural knowledge. Scriptural knowledge means ancient knowledge. How many scriptures are there in history? A lot. Just because we see the Bible as the most modern collection of knowledge, right? It's the telling of a story. It's the telling of the story of the natural law. We don't have a story telling the fictional law, the legal law, which is what my intent is to do, is to tell the story of the straw man. All the law, all the fictional law revolves around the person. And as long as we're in surety, connection to that person, we believe we are that thing, well then, there you go. So now we've got the believers and the non-believers, the Christians and the non-Christians, right? Mm. Well, what does that leave us with? A bunch of people who never read the damn Bible.
Hmm.
People who
in their own words, you know, earlier today, it's impossible for anybody to read the Bible if they don't go back to the original source material.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what my book, this is a very long and arduous treatise on law, whether that's scriptural law and whether it's legal law, the two are diametrically opposed to each other. So to know the story of the law, you must compare the two together. And to do that, the way I explain it is that the Bible is the story, like the Indians and all the ancient tribes and stuff. They would tell stories to their children and so that you could. The story was the law. It was the personification of the law. So you have Jesus Christ, which the church says was a real man, but Jesus Christ is a personification of the law. The law, the word law, the word word, and the word son are all the same. So the son of God is the word of God, the law of God. In other words, the natural law. How do we learn the story? Well, we do what Plato did. We create the democratic man or the timocratic man. We personify a character and we say, this is the example. This is the story of how to live under the natural law. You want an answer to how you get out from under all this debt? You give it up. You stop believing in it. You stop loving it because what you're loving is pure artificialness. The only way, according to again, the Bible being the first and foremost aspect, the foundation of all law in as the common law, you must follow the Bible. You must follow the law of the Bible. And so my goal was to cipher the Bible. It's already deciphered, but we don't have a dictionary. We don't have a dictionary of terms so that we can know what the Bible says. So that was my goal with the Bible. And then we have the legal law, which is ciphered, but not deciphered. We are living the story of the legal law. We wonder why things are so corrupt. It's because we're living under the legal law, not following the story of Christ. We're not becoming Christ-like. We're not following the example. This is not religion, my friend. Religion is something that takes the Bible and destroys it. We're talking about the law. We're talking about the law of nature. We're not talking about quote-unquote religion. We're talking about acting religiously, which is a verb, but a religion is just that in name only. Yep. Right?
The few people I know that would like, and that's a verb. And I'm like, yeah, that's a verb.
Right. So, sorry to say, there is no paper. You know, all these gurus out there are trying to sell you something, some remedy, right? Remedy, remedy, remedy. Remedy means that you're going to get some kind of money, right? You're going to get some kind of compensation for the sins against you. But solution, the word solution means end of contract, period, end of story. It means nothing else. If you aren't out of your contract, if you're not out of the debt, which is a
yes, exactly. Yeah, that's the whole point. All this talk, how do people actually get, as you call the solution, and what then are the repercussions as you exist within the larger legal planetary structure?
I would have never said this, Dennis. I would have never been in this disposition until I did all this research and really found out the purpose of the Bible is to make you and allow you to avoid all of this stuff. And you have to walk.
Okay, that's interesting. Clinton, let me get you back. That was good out. It's the picture.